T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's gone. Pritchard banks it home with 0.2 seconds remaining.
And the Boston Celtics win their third in a row.
These guys are ridiculous.
Dale Arnold.
Most players on the Celtics and the Heat took a knee during the national anthem. Both teams issued a joint statement saying they decided to play to, quote, try to bring joy into people's lives.
Rich Keefe.
You know, I've had the luxury of playing with the Bruins so many years, so I have no desire to go anywhere else.
Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart.
I love a good pickle.
What now?
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
There are days throughout your lifetime that you will never forget. Some of them have to do with sports. You'll always remember where you were and what you were doing when Adam Vinatieri won the first Patriots Super Bowl. You'll remember the Red Sox breaking their long World Series drought. But real world things, there are days that you just will never forget. You'll remember where you were, you'll remember how you felt, and you'll remember them forever. I'm old enough to go far enough back to, I was a little kid at the time, but having all of the kids in our school herded into the gymnasium and TVs brought in because President Kennedy had just been shot. But I remember days, we all do, things like when the Challenger exploded, 9/11, the Boston Marathon bombing. Yesterday was one of those days that goes on that list for me.
Yeah, this I think one, the, to
the
me,
thing
you
for
know,
me that... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the thing for me that has always opened my eyes, basically since 9/11 over the years, is it's become where we used to watch these things on, like, the national news, the nightly news, like when you're a kid growing up, and it's like you watch the local news, and there's certain stories, and then you click to the national news, and you're going to watch something happen in the Middle East or Russia or wherever these places are globally, and like you think you're insulated or like that doesn't happen here. The national news in the U.S. is different, you know, even in the movies where everything is about, you know, the U.S. is above everything else. Like we work with a certain set of rules as the good guys and like
we're
the
world
enforcers.
Police, right?
Right. We're the world police and the enforcers of democracy and all these things. To me, you know, from 9/11 on, like just those ideas that we're insulated here in our own little world is gone. Like we're no better. Like we've now seen these protests in the streets, these riots in the streets over the last year plus by various groups in various places, and it resulted in various levels of violence and anarchy or whatever you want to call it. But they're all things we used to watch on the nightly news, the national news around the globe. Now the reality is, that's our life. It's here. This is the way we work. We have groups in the country that are apparently trying to overthrow the government. I mean, I don't know how you could take that any other way. When you storm into the Capitol building, right, violently.
That's what that is.
You're trying, insurrection is the word that was thrown around a lot last night.
But also
night.
You're like, kind of allowed in, which is kind of
well, that's
concerning.
The weird part.
When they and open the doors for
concerning.
You.
When they're like, hey, come on in here, yeah. Let's take selfies and let's just have a good time in here. Very odd, very embarrassing. Really, for the country, you can only imagine what other countries around the world are looking at the United States. Like, this is the United States of America. This is where so many people are trying to go to and trying to live, and this is what's happening there. I also think one of the big differences, too, and you mentioned some of these other moments in time where you'll just never forget, and certainly for me, you know, 9/11 stands out, and the coverage of it, as Andy said, you went and found a TV. I was in high school at the time. We went to a place. There was a TV on. And you're all just kind of watching whatever the news people were able to capture at that time. Whereas in events now, really, and I hate to say it's just Twitter, but for me, you know, I'm on Twitter. I probably spend too much time on there. But you see photos from every angle, people that are involved, the idiots are posting stuff, the people, the witnesses are there, the people, you know, congressmen and women are posting stuff, and it's just getting retweeted and it's getting cycled around. And so in real time, before the news can even pick it up, right, like they're late, they're the last ones to it. Nobody's sitting there. I mean, you eventually got to watch news and get people's reactions to it, but as it was going on throughout the day, you're watching Twitter like, oh my god, you see this image, you see this image. And that's what stands out, because it's kind of defining that moment in time even more. When you see the guy with the Confederate flag standing in the middle of the Capitol building, like, what planet are we on? Like, what is this? What year is this? Who are these people? How is this allowed?
And you want to hear an interesting note about that? That is the only time in the history of the United States of America the Confederate flag has been in the U.S. Capitol building.
Right.
It has never.
No, no.
Never once has that flag been in the U.S. Capitol until yesterday.
It's gross. It's, I mean, it's gross.
It is. You know, and it's like a bad movie.
It's like all these other big events that we're talking about. And as you said, Rich, you know, I had the TV on all night. You couldn't stop watching on Twitter, to Rich's point. I found out that the Celtics and the Heat had just walked off the court. And I thought, okay, I better check on what's going on over there. You know, kept going back and forth. Even Brad Stevens said last night, 30 minutes before the game, he knew they weren't going to play the game. He was absolutely convinced they were not going to play the game, and he was fine with that. He said he made it very clear to his players, this organization supports you. You don't want to play, we don't play. I mean, that's where we're at now.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing that struck me deepest is where we're at is no one's happy. No one's hopeful.
Oh, like, that's
almost,
for sure.
I mean, I guess you could argue, yeah, there's some one percenters out there that are making money and whatever, and they're living. But it's like poor white people, poor black people, minorities, middle class white people, middle class black people, middle class, whoever you want to say. Everybody's like, they're down on something. They're fearful of something. And that is the saddest part of this. Like, there's not even a group that's riding high, really, and living the high.
No.
It's like all these fractured Americas. And that's the other thing that bothers me. It's like, are you a Trump person or a Biden person? Are you a Democrat? Well, we're Americans first.
Yeah.
Like, you mentioned those images, Rich, that you see on Twitter and videos. And, like, the people climbing that, like, window washing thing that was hanging. And they're throwing the American flag down while holding a Trump flag.
Like,
excuse me? What
There's
the hell
Trump
are
flag.
We doing
yeah.
here?
Like, well, it feels like a civil war. Like, I feel like I thought that was, you know, behind us as a country. And maybe it is less so. And that's the other thing, is because there had been so many other like actual protest beforehand, you're like, that's not what we saw yesterday. That's a different thing. And you can only imagine, you know, if the people who stormed the Capitol looked a little bit different, how would that have
played
out?
Were black.
If they
didn't
look like the cast of Duck Dynasty, and instead they looked like, you know, a Tyler Perry movie, there'd be death. There'd be tens, dozens, maybe even more deaths. And you would have every kind of, you know, they were showing the images, like all these guys, like the full riot gear, the SWAT teams and everybody, you'd have that. Instead, it was, yeah, doors open, go on in. Like, go on in. Like, what? And some
on
of those
June
pictures
3rd,
that you saw, just
last
sickening.
June 3rd, when the Black Lives Matter protest was happening, was going to happen in Washington, D.C., there were images being shown yesterday of National Guard troops in full combat regalia.
Yeah.
Lined up on the steps of the Lincoln Monument, and I mean almost shoulder to shoulder. Yesterday, when National Guard troops were first asked for, the White House said, "Nah, we're good."
Right, and that's the issue. I mean, this is a guy in Trump that used all kinds of force to cross a street to take a photo in front of a church.
To a church. Yep.
So what he wants done, or what he wants to do, sort of leads the charge. And then you had later, they did send in the National Guard. He was sort of undercut and various issues there.
The vice president sent them in.
Right. And
Mike Pence said, no, we're
even,
sending them in.
Even Pence said, I'm drawing a line.
So that's the issue here is, and I know the 25th Amendment has been brought up, and even though it's only now 13 days left, you know, is he stable? I said this to my wife. You can have all the politics you want, anything. Would you let that man do anything for you? And I mean anything. Would you let him house sit, watch your kid? I got to run down
watch
to the grocery store. Can you watch your kid?
No.
That's the president. Like,
correct.
You wouldn't let him watch your kid. I wouldn't let him watch my house.
No,
and we're letting him oversee the country. He oversees all of this right now, and that's where it's scary. And I know he sort of backtracked last night, and we're going to have a peaceful transfer of power.
No, he didn't
whoever.
Say that.
Well,
he said orderly. Orderly.
Oh, okay.
He orderly. Didn't say peaceful.
Well, can
because
it be orderly
after yesterday,
and not
he sort
peaceful?
Of lost that, right?
Well, I mean, he lost control or
now.
Got what he wanted. Right. I mean,
yeah, he got what he
peaceful,
wanted.
Orderly, whatever. I mean, he backed down a little bit. I think he's toast. I think he is not a stable man. I don't know that he was ever a stable man, but the stability has gotten worse as this has gone on. I mean, I can't even imagine there's still people working for him. First thing I thought of when he put out that video that was then you couldn't retweet it and then it was pulled and like whatever was, is somebody holding the camera? Like, who's the person that's working with him for him? Because I envisioned 100 takes it took to do that, where he says things that just veer off and nope, stop, we got to start over. You can't say that. You can't. Who's still working for him? Who's still aligned with him? Right? I mean, I saw Melania's chief of staff.
Rudy Giuliani.
Rudy Giuliani. Yes,
Rudy
he's got
Giuliani,
one answer there.
He's got Rudy Giuliani and his kids.
And
that's
Ted
probably
Cruz.
Who he's got on his
and
side.
Ted Cruz.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Okay. So we all thought, to your point, Andy, we all thought that Joe Biden, who was officially certified last night, was going to be the 46th president of the United States. The question is, will he be the 47th?
Right. And I mean, I don't know enough about the 25th Amendment
me
and
either.
How that plays
well,
out.
I understand the logistics of it.
Yes, but I don't know.
And it's hard for me to picture Mike Pence pulling the trigger on that. And that's a terrible metaphor after what we saw yesterday. I apologize. He has to initiate this.
Right.
I don't see him doing it. But if he did, it lasts for 4 days. And then at the end of the 4 days, if the president says, no, I'm good, I'm ready to go, they can do it for another 4 days, which gets you through 8 of the 13 days that are left.
Right.
But I don't know that that'll happen.
Yeah, I don't know either, and maybe they can just rein him in enough to get through.
Seems unlikely. Although Twitter took away his Twitter for about 12 hours.
Yeah, yes, so the guy who has the nuclear codes is not capable of having a Twitter feed.
They also
that's a lot of responsibility on Twitter.
They also
know?
Banned him on Twitch and removed the Twitch emote PogChamp. Because he used it in one of his statements.
That's why Shyam's here.
Real change.
Good info there. I wouldn't have had that.
I was up in arms about that.
They got rid of that. Interesting. So pretty big impact yesterday. Now, one thing, you mentioned Joe Biden. He tweeted yesterday that America is so much better than what we're seeing today. I would argue. Is it?
Right. I think that.
I'm not sure.
We want to pretend we are and we want to be, but are we?
I don't think so. I feel like, you know, prior to the coronavirus, which is coming up on a year now, was it every week there was a mass shooting? Like, every single week there was a mass shooting.
Felt like it, yeah.
And then coronavirus, you have people that just, they won't take it seriously, and it's just dragging on for another year. And then you have what happened yesterday at the Capitol. And, like, all these words, like, all it was yesterday was just tweets of people, like, trying to grab likes and be like, hey, come on, like, this is so bad, right? Like, yeah, it's the worst. And, like, your tweet's not going to help it. And even though he's going to be the next president, like, America's so much better. Is it? Like, I really, at this point, I don't know how you can say that with a straight face.
Dragging it back to the world we inhabit most of the time, there were so many athletes last night who made such impassioned statements. The two Jays for the Celtics, I thought, were tremendous post-game. With the things they said.
Yeah.
Draymond Green was a little more explicit in what he said post-game after their game. Yeah, he used a couple of F-bombs in there.
Yep.
The fact of the matter is you have to understand what these athletes are seeing. They see the way protesters and the Black Lives Movement were treated back in June, and they watch what happened yesterday where protesters are basically invited in and then escorted out. The one video that you saw of the police, Capitol Police officer helping this lady down the stairs, holding her hand as she's going back down the steps afterwards.
How about the one guy taking selfies with the guy?
Right.
The police officer, it's probably like an off-duty cop, the guy that's in there with him, and he's like taking pictures with him. You're like, what is this?
Whereas before,
I'm pretty sure there was batons and tear gas and all kinds of stuff before.
So if you're an athlete and you express what Jaylen Brown expressed post-game last night, I'm sorry, he's right.
We definitely want to speak to some of the things that's been going on in our society. It reminds me of what Dr. Martin Luther King has said, that there is two split different Americas, In one America, you get killed by sleeping in your car, selling cigarettes, or playing in your backyard. And in another America, you get to storm the Capitol. No tear gas, no massive arrests, none of that. So I think it's obvious. It's 2021. I don't think anything has changed. We want to still acknowledge that. We want to still push for the change that we're looking for. But as of yet, we have not seen it.
You know, when, you know, we see our people, you know, peacefully protesting for things that we see our people getting, you know, murdered on TV and live and videos, you know, they're protesting the Capitol or rioting the Capitol for losing an election. You know, it's two different things. And I want the same energy on TV, you know, to be, you know, they're thugs and criminals, you know, the same terms that they use, you know, when they see our people protesting for losing our lives. You know, I think it's bigger than basketball. It's bigger than the game today. But I just felt like that, you know, the statement, us talking about it, us going on the court on national TV could, you know, shed more light than not playing. And, you know, that's what we talked about in the locker room.
And my guess is, it's only a guess, maybe unfair, but it's just a guess on my part, that the guys on the scaffold outside the Capitol who took the American flag and dropped it to the ground so that they could hang the Trump flag are just pissed off when an athlete takes a knee during the national anthem, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's un-American. Disrespectful to the flag, you know.
Disrespecting our country.
4 years ago. Yeah, that's a hard argument to make for those guys, isn't it? For a guy before the game even kicks off to put politics into sports. It's like, no.
I'm not sure that a lot of people in that group are the most intelligent. I'm not sure they're in the best shape physically, health-wise. I mean, I saw initially there were four deaths. One was the woman who was shot. The three others were medical emergencies, right? That's what they were termed?
Presumably.
So what is that?
It sounds like a guy who had a heart attack, you know.
Cynically, I thought the fat old coot had a heart attack. Like, cynically, that's how I took
that.
Some fat, out-of-shape coot had a heart attack. But it was just... I still just get back to the bottom line is, and not that I would sympathize with anybody that was protesting or rioting or doing anything that took place. I will say, remember for the inauguration, it was all about pictures and census taking and how many people were there. Were there more people there for this than there were for the inauguration? Because like some of the photos I saw, there were a lot of people, Trump supporters, at this rally that started sort of the whole day. Like streets were filled with, where did they come from? That was the question.
I don't
know. I was like, where did, like, did they fly in? Or are these all people that were driving distance?
Yeah,
like, it was
shocking. There were videos of planes filled with Trump supporters flying into our nation's capital. Now, this date, this event, had been known for weeks.
Right.
The president had been saying, January 6th, we'll see you all in Washington. So,
they were wearing shirts. There was one guy that said, like, Civil War, January 6th. And then there were people on the news being like, I don't know if they just came up with this today or what.
Imagine making T-shirts for that, like a bachelorette party makes T-shirts.
Yeah.
And it was
so if you're like
a
T-shirt printing company, you're like, you're doing what now? What do you want me to say?
It was such a strange group, too, when you looked at the attire, the age, I mean, there were
not a lot
ladies,
of diversity, though.
Like,
in the group.
Oh no. Certainly,
not a
constant
lot.
Was that they were white. But
I saw one black man, and the reason I said it was that it just stuck out at you. You saw, you know, and they were inside the Capitol, and you know this horde of people going through, and I saw this one guy, and I thought he's the only guy I see who looks like him here.
Yep,
literally the only guy I see.
I'm stunned Trump didn't pull him up on the podium and.
Clayton Bigsby, if you guys remember from the Chappelle show, he was the black white supremacist because he was blind. one of the great characters ever.
There was an incredible report. It was on ITV, and it goes about 4 minutes long, 5 minutes long. It's getting a lot of hype. This ITV reporter from Britain, I guess, literally was with the group the entire time. And he's being jostled and talking to people, and he's right with them as they're storming in.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Oh.
Best case scenario, you're just walking away with the coronavirus. Worst case scenario, you're dead.
By the way, end of that guy's live stream, and this is not a joke, I swear to God, he goes out there, and there's this little like after party going on where they have a DJ playing music. He walks up to go interview the DJ, and I swear to God, this happened on the live stream. The riff from Sweet Home Alabama started playing. I'm not making that up.
No, of course it did.
See, now you know why I hate all that music.
Hey,
I like the
music.
Country music.
Country music. Take a hike.
So that you know, listen, we all live in this country. We all live in this world. 98% of the time, our focus is on the more mundane candy store of life stuff, but we're also all Americans, and we live in this country, and we live in this world, and we didn't want to just ignore what happened yesterday, because it was one of the defining days of my lifetime. I never, ever thought in the United States of America I would see people storming the U.S. Capitol building.
And
I never
zero
thought.
Resistance. Not only were they
storming, why are you climbing
like,
up the wall? They'll let you in the door over
here.
Yeah, well, you know?
You're risking yourself. You just walk right in. The door's open. It's not even locked. Yeah, that's just, it was crazy.
We mentioned the Celtics. We'll talk about what happened last night as the legend of Peyton Pritchard continues to grow. This mm-hmm. guy, if they haven't built a statue next to Reds for this guy yet, mm-hmm. somebody's fallen asleep on the job. I will talk to you guys as well at 617-779-7937. Peter King will join us at 11:30 this morning. It's Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart, and it's time to trend.
How does Rich Keefe celebrate a Celtics win?
God. You needed a shower and a cigarette after that
I
play,
did.
Didn't
I,
you?
I lit up a Virginia Slims 120.
He's naked the rest of the night.
Now back to Dale and Keefe on WEEI.
There it is right there. Marcus Smart on the drive. Tries to draw contact on the follow. It's gone. Pritchard banks it home with 0.2 seconds remaining.
It's got to be right to the front of the rim.
Butler throws it up for Adebayo. Got a good tip on it, but that will do it. And the Boston Celtics win their third in a row.
And the legend of 8 Mile continues to grow.
Love
First
this guy,
all,
Dale.
Anytime
Love
we can
this
play
guy.
This stuff, it's worth it. So you know, it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Pritchard just continues to show that this is going to end up being one of Danny Ainge's great draft picks.
It seems like it, especially because we know that outside the lottery, it is really tough. Like you can go back through a lot of drafts. Like there's a handful of good second rounders. Late first rounders, there's not many. And in fact, it's not even lottery picks. It's like top five picks. Like that's what you kind of need. And that's why we were so disappointed with, you know, the Memphis pick ended up being number 14. And then your own pick ended up being late 20s. And to get Peyton Pritchard, now a lot, you know, it's again, they've played, what, 8 games, 9 games, or whatever else it is. But he is ready to go. He is a contributor right away. And how many times has Danny, when they've had good teams, gone into the draft, taken a guy who was nowhere near ready? Like, J.R. Giddens was drafted late first round on a team that was good, and if they could have gotten something from him, maybe he could have played. You know, Juwan Johnson was a late round first round pick. Useless. Jared Sullinger was okay for a minute, but that was a bad team. Fab Mello, useless. Rest in peace. There was a lot of guys that were just no good, and here you have one in the 20s who comes right in and is a rotational player, and you trust him on the court. Wasn't a great shooting night for him, but he stuck with it. And of all guys to have an offensive rebound putback game winner, yeah, it's one of the shortest guys on the floor. Like, I love it. Love Peyton Pritchard. I don't know how you can't.
And you see his energy and the timeout on the bench when he was like bouncing. I don't know what they were laughing about, but he was just like bubbly, I guess would be the word. He was like bouncing up and down, giddy, as he should be. Mm-hmm. He should be. And the thing that I keep talking about is he just looks like he fits in. Like, forget the playmaking or the shooting or the whatever the details may be.
Yeah.
Or the fact that occasionally in these small lineups he gets caught guarding like Miles Turner and Bam Adebayo or whatever. Like, forget the details. He looks like he fits in. I also have fallen in love with his little Bob Cousy thing, where he like dribbles in and out of the paint, like in a circle, through the paint, out the
He's
other
got
side
good
of the
handle.
Paint.
Yeah.
He does. But but it's not like Kyrie handle. It's not flashy.
Well, nobody
it's
is.
Not yeah. sexy. But there's a lot of guys, like, he's just fluid. And I continue to go back to, I don't think it's a mistake that he's a career college basketball player, that he's a more experienced, polished, older, he has a presence to him. Like, all of those things are different than, you know, the one and done or the young guy with physical upside, but it's going to take a few years.
Oh,
for
there's
him
so
to
much projection with the one and done guys, and you're just kind of fingers crossed. And yeah, they certainly have a higher ceiling, but the floor is much lower. There's more risk of a bust with those guys. Whereas Peyton Pritchard, you're like, all right, we kind of have a pretty good idea of what he is. I mean, some of these guys coming out of college, you know, especially this abbreviated year or other years. Remember, Kyrie Irving was injured. They played like 5-6 college games, and you're like, I don't know. Let's see. Pritchard's probably played like 80-something college games, or maybe more. And so, yeah, he's been good. And also, no Jeff Teague last night, so there's going to be a little bit more opportunity for him. There hasn't been Kemba Walker all season long, and he's stepped right in and filled a role that they've needed.
I hearken back to Bill Parcells, who once said, I don't like to throw a young player to the wolves. until I find out if he's one of the Wolves. And at least at this moment, Peyton Pritchard looks like one of the Wolves. Now, what you hope is that he doesn't become Jeremy Lin or something, that, you know, this is real and long-term and not a flash in the pan, because what you've seen so far, he kind of looks like he's one of the Wolves.
Yeah. Lin's an interesting example because Lin kind of flashed and he was the guy, but then it was like all the attention was on him and he had to be their guy, whereas with Pritchard, if anything, his role might pick and choose where they use him a little bit more. Like, he is, even as great as he is playing, what is he, their ninth best player? Or, you know, whatever else, whatever it is. So I think he's in a good position, though, to, you know, continue to develop this way. He's going to have big, and Brad Stevens talked about this the other night. You know, he had 20 points a game after he had 0 points. Like, so he's a rookie. Like, there's going to be ups and downs. It was interesting. The other night, there was an opportunity to start him, and Brad still didn't. He went with Tremont Waters.
Yep.
The kid who he's clearly ahead of on the depth chart, but Tremont Waters was in the system anyway. He played in Maine last year. He's in the system for a year. They gave him the start, and Pritchard played a lot off the bench in that game. But, I mean, you also got to assume every single game he's gaining more and more confidence that, yeah, I definitely belong. You know, this isn't a fluke thing. This is more games where he's been able to be a big part of the team.
And he's getting a lot of minutes, but it's not like he's getting a lot of touches in terms of shots. Like, they were in position to win last night because Jason Tatum hit a three, Jaylen Brown hit a three. Like, that was part of it. This is still the J team. Like, you're still riding the J team. And as you said, when it's Kemba Walker back and when Teague is in there. But doesn't he feel like a guy that is, like, it's not like he's having the opportunity right now to take 17 shots and, like, everything's going through him and he's scoring 20 points. He's doing what he's asked to do on a nightly basis. And that
that's
going
to be a hard thing to do. You know, for a guy who led the Pac-12 in points and assists, so the ball was always in his hands, right? Either he was scoring or he was giving it to somebody who was going to score. And so that has to change completely. And it's going to be tough for guys to show up. And you see Jason Tatum, you see Jaylen Brown, but you also have to shoot. Like, you can't just rely on those guys. And so he's found that balance. One thing that we, you know, Marcus Smart, the last couple of years, we've been kind of frustrated with. I think he's been better at it this year, but we've been frustrated with him, you know, not knowing, all right, why are you taking 15 shots today? This is not the game for you to take 15 shots. Pritchard seems to have a better idea of that.
A quick aside about last night, and I'm jump-starting from a tweet Andy Hart sent out about an hour or so ago.
Oh, oh.
Back in the day when the Bruins had the Pooh Bear jerseys, I hated them. Hated the Pooh Bear jersey. My daughters, my kids loved them.
Yep.
Andy Hart's tweet about an hour or so ago said, he's quoting his son, "Those Heat jerseys are the best jerseys ever." And then he quotes Old Man Twitter, "Those Heat jerseys are the worst jerseys ever." They got a Miami Vice thing going, obviously, here with the pink and the blue and all that stuff. It's a little busy, isn't it?
So I liked their previous Vice City uniforms that they used to have. These ones, when it's split, like both colors, like that blue, that off blue, whatever you want to call it, and the pink, I like them both, but I don't like it split down the middle like that. If the whole jersey was blue and then like the outline was like the pink or vice versa, I think I'd like that a lot more. I'm good with the color. I thought the court looked cool. I always like the college courts that look crazy and the big mascots and all the different
like
colors.
Oregon
like
or
that.
Something.
Yep. Well, that one's extreme, but I even do. I like that one. But yeah, I don't like the split jersey.
Being old the man youth Keith. Representatives of the show here, I'm going to tell you, these jerseys are fire.
I love them too. I actually love them too. I wondered, the court, as much.
Are they intending these for the kids in the same way the Bruins Pooh Bear jerseys? Every kid in Boston wanted a Pooh Bear jersey.
Yep. Probably.
Are they just specifically targeting the younger audience?
Yes, I would say to some degree. I would also say, this is what a third jersey city jersey can be. You don't have to be the most boring jersey on the planet like the Celtics.
The Celtics one.
Right?
Blows.
Like, yeah, isn't that what an alternate jersey is? Gives you an alternative to the normal stuff.
Yes, very well said. Right? The Miami Heat Vice City jerseys from the last couple of years, though, were much better, in my opinion. In my humble opinion.
You're the old white guy on Twitter.
But I'm just saying.
White guy on Twitter, Keith. Get off my lawn. These jerseys are too much.
No, they hurt my eyes. I think the real old would say they didn't even like those ones because it's not even the Miami Heat team colors. Like, it's a complete departure from it. I'm going to be consistent because I hate the Jacksonville Jaguars when they switched to their helmet that was two different colors. I was like, you got to pick a color.
But the problem was, it was bad colors too.
Well, the colors.
This is two cool colors, so why not use them both? Blend them.
But you were.
Like neon pink and baby blue. Those are fire.
Yeah, but you're not. So they did use them both before, but the jersey itself would be all one color, and then the number would be the other, and it looked awesome. This one, I feel like, is just you're doing it a little too much.
Yeah. So like like that one. Or
Andy
like
Hart
the black
has one.
One
he, was that a Dwayne Wade Miami pink one? Yeah. So that one's pretty slick. I like that. And then they also do the one with blue, and they also do a black one of those.
The black one's really nice.
It's got the pink number and the blue Miami.
And then the two colors like line where the arms are, where the sleeves are.
I have zero problem with the pink, but that's not the one we're talking about.
No, I know, but you can use both. Like, they try to do something new every year, right? Like, with these city jerseys, like, you got to one-up yourself. You got to do something different. Because you need people to buy them.
The
That's
Celtics
also part of
sit
it.
This out. Every jersey they've tried stinks more than the last.
No. You know what they need to do? Stop trying to be conservative Boston Celtics
to appease old man Twitter.
Go all the... I've said this before. One of their colors is gold, right? You see gold outlines. Yeah. They did the one year with the...
Yeah.
Do a gold jersey. See what happens. Mm. I don't know if Dale Arnold and Rich Keefe will like it or hate it, but I bet you some kids will buy it.
That's true.
You got white jerseys?
It looks like the banners.
Third.
Who cares?
And I still say
it was a good idea. Like, in a meeting somewhere, someone said, you know what we do? What are we known for?
What are we? Yeah.
I want the old
Celtic mascot, who he himself, remember, to be in the logos, it was never on the uniform.
Yes.
Put him on the uniform.
I said that as well when we talked about
Thank
this
you.
When the Cattles and
Hearts. Spinning
Heart
the ball on his finger. Awesome.
How about gold with him on it? Boom. Double Spinning up and then around. Rich Keefe would hate it too much.
I'm
like
okay
gold,
with that too.
I suggested it. How would I hate it?
I don't know.
I want the little guy on there.
You have more old man in you than you think.
Oh, that's true.
617. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the problem I had with the court was... It wasn't true to the jersey. So the jerseys blend from blue to pink.
Yeah, like they were like, this,
what do they call that, a gradient?
I think it's easier to do in the cloth than it is on the hardwood. I think that's the problem.
Oh, suck it up and find a way. You're the freaking, you're an NBA team. Get
that's
it
right.
done. Don't tell me why not. Show me why.
I know, I get it. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We'll talk a little bit about a possible quarterback option for the Patriots. We sort of scoffed at it yesterday. Maybe we won't scoff at it as much today. It's Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Back to Dale and Keefe, discussing the future of the Patriots' QB position.
Between potential trades, free agents, and the draft, there are too many quarterbacks better than Cam Newton. This shouldn't be...
And there are too many needs on the Patriots.
Threw for 350 last week.
On WEEI.
Mike, before I let you go, we need your official 2021 Patriots quarterback prediction. Rookie, trade for somebody, Cam back, who do you think?
I think they're going to end up with Jimmy Garoppolo. That's my gut feeling right now.
Really?
Because if I'm the 49ers, maybe they'll have the same concerns I have about Garoppolo. You got to be more durable to be a franchise quarterback in the NFL. You can't say, well, the guy's great when he plays. Well, he's not playing enough to make it worth the while of having him as your quarterback. To the extent that they're looking for somebody who can come in and kind of be the bridge to whatever they figure out in the future, I think Garoppolo would make a ton of sense.
So that was Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, this morning on the Greg Hill Show, saying that he thinks, his gut feeling is, Jimmy Garoppolo ends up back here. Then comes another plan, if you want to really sit here and dream. Today, the Houston Texans made it official. They announced that Nick Caserio is the new general manager. Very nice contract. We'll talk about that with Peter King later. 6-year deal, $5 million a year. Great. Good for him. I'm happy for him. And we said yesterday, the last thing you can do if you're Nick Caserio is trot in there and trade away Deshaun Watson. You just can't. And then Pro Football Talk puts out a tweet yesterday, says there's growing buzz in league circles that Deshaun Watson could ask to be traded, and his new contract doesn't make that as difficult as you'd think. Now, if you want to dream, dream
big. Oh, I'm dreaming big. I'm dreaming big here. But that also, there's a big distinction there as far as Nick Caserio is concerned, right? Because if he walks in there and his star quarterback, who was just on a really bad team, you saw the J.J. Watt talking to him after the game and everything, and they know Watson had a great year, top five quarterback, but his team stinks. And so that was all before Caserio ever got there. And if Caserio gets there and his star player wants out, well, again, it's not an ideal situation, but if he's able to get a Herschel Walker-like return for him, well, maybe that sort of starts the process. Like, I don't think you're going to be a winner next year anyway, so maybe that helps start the process. It's a lot different than Bill O'Brien trading away DeAndre Hopkins and then bad-mouthing him out the door, or even it's a lot different than Josh McDaniels going to Denver and trading Jay Cutler and Brandon Marshall and being like, all right, I'm getting rid of those guys, let's start over. If Watson really wants out, and I don't really know if we know that that's true or not, but if he wants out, then maybe that would be Casario's first move, as crazy as it is.
It does sound crazy to me because he is a legit franchise quarterback. I know Tom Curran had his reservations about what Deshaun Watson is, but I almost never hear a bad word about him from anybody. People that have worked there,
he's the man. He does the
things with like the cafeteria workers where he gives, like, everybody loves Deshaun Watson. Clearly J.J. Watt does. I know Bill O'Brien did. Everybody loves him, and you watch him play, what's not to love? Do I get occasionally frustrated when he like puts the ball down as he scrambles and does some weird athletic things? Sure. But go back and watch that Patriots game. Forget the athleticism. Go look at the throws that were absolute, like, perfect throws. There were times they were well covered, and he just puts it in there.
And that game in particular, you compared and contrasted his throwing of the football with your quarterback's throwing of the football, and it's like, oh, my God.
So you can
now,
say...
I don't think it's realistic, which is my
either.
Plan B, which Florio talked about this morning, seems much more realistic. We mentioned this earlier. Andrew Brandt said it's a cap hit of just $2.8 million to the 49ers if they release Jimmy Garoppolo. Certainly affordable. Any team can absorb that. He suddenly goes out there in the free agency market, and we think Bill Belichick loves this guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, texting and the history and all that. Yeah,
and all the praise that he's given him, you know, even when. So, yeah, I think that he loves him. But he also has to be well aware of his history, too. You know,
yes.
He goes from one quarterback, Belichick does, for 20 years.
Never gets hurt, basically.
He misses 15 games total in 19 seasons. And that was all just because of one injury. And to go to Jimmy Garoppolo, who's hurt all the time, I wonder how much money he would really throw his way, but we know he likes him.
And remember, this started in New England. Questions about Jimmy Garoppolo's durability, ability to absorb pain. Remember there were criticisms of the Brissett game that internally,
Brissett should not have played in that game.
This is pain management.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah,
and they didn't just question whether he was hurt. It was more of a question of, like, is he not willing to play in pain?
Should he be back out there?
Mm-hmm. Is he tough enough? There were people really throwing that about, kind of questioning the basis of who Jimmy Garoppolo is as an athlete, as a competitor. And then you go to San Francisco and all the missed time there. And I know some of those are significant with the ACL and the games missed. But the reality is, like, I'm big on facts, not like narratives or what you think. The fact is he doesn't stay healthy. That's just who he is. And if we're going to hold Rozai Dowling to a certain standard, right, because he couldn't stay on the field in high school, in college, in the NFL.
Yeah.
Jimmy Garoppolo can't stay on the field. It's a fact.
Yeah, I don't want him. And then even when he's on the field, I think at best he's kind of an average quarterback. Like, he's definitely an NFL starting caliber quarterback. Like, don't get me wrong on that. But I feel like he kind of tops out at 14, 15, somewhere in the league. So I think then you're like, okay, you have that, but you don't even have that consistently. Like, Matt Stafford, in my mind, is probably also around there. But he's more healthy. Like, this guy is more likely he's going to be on the field, so his value to me is greater. But as far as just the question about there's definitely that connection. And if it happens, Dale, I don't know if it does, but if it happens, I would certainly have to apologize to a lot of callers who have called in our show over the last couple of years.
He's just going
to
come back, you know.
Garoppolo's going to be back. Everybody knows it. And I'm like, get out of here. I would get so mad about that. And you know what? We're a few months away from that possibly happening.
But isn't the biggest question how you acquire him? And the assets, the value that
you
place
on him. Well, we're assuming now they release him.
No,
he's
I know,
a free
but
agent and...
if you release him and then go out and pay him $25 million a year, or actually significantly more than that, because I'm sorry, but if Adam Schefter says Cam Newton could get 40 to 50,
I feel like
then,
that
two
can't
years.
Be right.
That was 2 years. It was 20
well, then
to
Garoppolo,
$25 million a year.
Right. So then Garoppolo should get 30 to 35 million a year because he's better than Cam Newton. Can we agree on that? He's better than Cam Newton.
Nobody believes Adam Schefter's report about 40 to 50 million.
Yeah, but here you go. What did Philip Rivers and what did Teddy Bridgewater just make?
20 to 25.
So that's probably where Garoppolo is. Newton's not. That came out of left field.
Stupid.
But Jimmy Garoppolo Probably. So if you give him, a year ago, he was in the Super Bowl, so yeah.
Would you give him 3 at 75 or 4 at 90 or something like that?
I would not, but I could see Belichick maybe doing that.
And now you've invested. So now,
That's like an investment. All
the cap money we've talked about, well, you just took a big chunk of it and said it's on this quarterback, and you, at least, Rich, don't feel like – you still have a lot to do because he's a game manager. He's an overseer of the offense. I still need to find tight end, wide receiver, upgrade my defensive front, and I've already put $20 to $25 million into Jimmy Garoppolo.
Okay, so let's play it out. We started talking about Deshaun Watson, who I think we are in agreement, all three of us, that this is a top five quarterback in the NFL, right?
Yep.
Yes.
All right. So if you're talking about allocation of salary cap assets, and you acquire Deshaun Watson, are you then able to go out and do those things you just talked about? You got to get wide receivers. You got to get tight ends. Now the money you're giving Deshaun Watson because you're acquiring that contract is significantly
higher. Worse. It's worse because I have no problem with the money. I would pay the money to Deshaun Watson. He's legit. The problem is I'm trading for Deshaun Watson. So I'm paying him a lot of money, and I probably gave up three first-round picks or something ridiculous that have now – now my hands are tied. Now how am I getting tight end,
wide
receiver,
pass rusher? By the way, a team that doesn't
have
a first-round pick or a second-round pick this year.
Correct. Right.
So here's what I would say, though, and because I understand kind of what you're getting at, Dale, is that if you trade all these picks for Deshaun Watson, why are you then not the Texans? Like, the Texans have Watson and not much else. They won 4 games.
How are you going to get the other things to go with him?
Well, I'll tell you, though, Bill Belichick, and I know it wasn't his best year, but he won 7 games with the worst starting quarterback in the NFL. If you give him Deshaun Watson, don't they, even with this roster, don't they win 9-10 games with Deshaun Watson? You still have more ability to bring in some other guys. So I think you go from the Bill O'Brien, Romeo Crennel year in Houston to Bill Belichick with Deshaun Watson, and he can start to build around him. And yeah, you're going to lose your first round pick. You're going to lose a couple other things that you have to get him. But I think that is what you would have to hold your hope out for, is that here's a guy just with the coaching alone who we just saw it this year with Cam Newton throwing 8 touchdowns. They won 7 games.
So you're also not using as much cap space as you think they are.
On Watson?
Yeah, because so his first season, so that year you would trade those first round pick, multiple picks, whatever it would take, it would only be $15 million in 2020. 2021, sorry. Yeah. Because it's the final year of his rookie deal. That new contract doesn't kick in until 2022, so that's when the big cap hits start. So you'd really have a year to still acquire other talent in free agency, whereas you won't have the draft picks, and get Watson, and then the years following is where you'd kind of be in cap hell.
All right, you'd be Bill, and I'm just going to say, I'm Nick Caserio, you're Bill. Bill, I'm willing to trade Deshaun Watson to you. It'll take a first and second round pick this year and a first round pick next year.
Yes, I'm done.
I would do it.
That's all you're asking for?
Would do it. Yeah,
that's
Bill, would Bill do that?
I would, and I think there's no real precedent for it. However, if you take things separately, he traded a first round pick for Brandon Cooks.
Yep.
He traded a second round pick for Mohamed Sanu. So he is willing to trade some high draft picks in order to get established players, and Cooks and Sanu are no Deshaun Watson.
No.
Bill knows Deshaun Watson. He's faced him a bunch of times. He's also, like, that would be your guy for 12 years. Like, that is 100% the type of guy. There's probably a handful, maybe two handfuls, of players that you should give up multiple first-round picks for.
By the way, I'm not sure that would get it done.
No, maybe not.
First and second this year, which Houston is missing. First-round pick next year. That might be too light.
You can have N'Keal Harry. How's that? I'll be a nice guy.
Oh,
you can
come
have N'Keal
on
Harry.
Now.
You'd probably have to throw in another first-round pick, to be completely honest.
You might.
3 firsts? Yeah.
And
I mean,
second.
He is in that category. But what have the Patriots done with their first-round picks? I mean, not to be that guy, but what have they really done with them? I'd take Deshaun Watson. Would you rather have Deshaun Watson or Michelle, Harry, and Wynn?
Okay. We're all in agreement about who he is and what he is.
That's how it works. But
we're trying to put ourselves, though, in the shoes of the guy. I don't picture Belichick giving up 3 firsts in a second for
anybody.
But
what do you think?
But
what
maybe
do you think
he does.
Bill's big takeaway that he wouldn't tell, you know, he wouldn't tell OMF, he wouldn't tell anybody in the post-game press conference, but his big takeaway of going from Brady to Cam Newton, is he thinking, you know what, it wasn't that bad. We won 7 games. We're just going to shore up a couple things. We'll be fine. Or is he saying, man, I got to have a good quarterback. I can't go through this again. If I'm going to win, I don't need Mahomes to win. I don't need Wilson to win, but I need somebody pretty damn good. I wonder what his real honest takeaway was.
I think he looks at the roster and says what you said. He said, I had no wide receivers, no tight ends, no front seven, and I won seven games. I don't need a superstar quarterback. Yeah. If I fill in those things around me.
So I don't have to give up all that stuff to this guy.
Right. I can get
a pass. I'm going to Jimmy Garoppolo for nothing except
money. He's more likely to go get two linebackers, a D-tackle. Yeah,
right. It falls in line with that quote, you know, give me the 15th best quarterback and I'll win the Super Bowl.
But it is funny, though. That's probably what Jimmy Garoppolo is.
Yeah, probably.
Best quarterback.
Yeah. And then he might have a good year. You put him with the right talent, he bumps up to like a top 8 or 9 quarterback, and then there's another year where he doesn't. But see, that's my whole concern with all those guys. Stafford, Garoppolo. And I do think Stafford is better. But if Stafford comes in and he's throwing to Juss Keene and Asiasi and Jacoby Myers.
No, I know. You're right.
I don't know how good that offense is going to be. And we know the defense has its own issues. The defense could lose its best player if you end up trading or moving on from Stephon Gilmore in some form or fashion.
But don't you think Watson's one of those few guys who's sort of a different conversation than Stafford and Garoppolo? Obviously, you're going to have to upgrade receiver anyway. But Watson probably could still squeeze out 28 touchdown passes with this group. Like he probably, to me, is that good.
Yes, except, see, the starter here is, I don't think there's any way they trade Deshaun Watson. I can't even envision. They're already hated in Houston. I did a radio hit with one of our sister stations yesterday afternoon, and they were just joking about how hated Easterby is and how, like, the fan base is really questioning everything. And the one way to make that worse.
They're not happy they hired Caserio.
No. The one way to make that worse is get rid of Deshaun Watson. He's the one thing they have to, like, hold on to as the greatness.
I understand it's apples to oranges, but what was Chaim Bloom's first move that he made when he took over the Red Sox? Trade Mookie Betts.
Was Mookie the first move?
Well, I mean, whatever. He might have signed some scrub.
Right,
but I'm saying, like,
the first
signature move, trade away the best player.
The signature move for anybody, ever.
Yeah.
But what's the difference?
That guy.
What's the difference?
Contract. I understand the
contract. The perception is one was gone either way.
Yeah, yeah. No, you have Watson.
This guy we just inked.
I understand it's different, but I'm saying you go in there and that's a major trade. Now, that was also ownership probably telling you this is what you have to do.
And he probably knew it when he took the job, right?
Probably.
Nick Caserio, was he told, oh, by the way.
You're talking about the fan base in Houston. I'm saying the fan base here doesn't really care about the, he had to do it and, like, what the salary tax.
No, I'm just saying I don't find it realistic. I just can't envision a world where I wake up some morning and it says the Houston Texans have traded Deshaun Watson. That would be one of – Brady is a different thing. Manning is a different thing. Like, that'd be one of the most remarkable trades, QB stories, transactions, maybe the most remarkable. He's a young, budding MVP candidate under contract in the NFL. Like, that would be – like almost laughable. You think they were laughed at for Hopkins? You know, yeah. Let's trade. One off season, we're going to trade Hopkins. The next off season, we're going to trade the quarterback. That's how you rebuild a team.
Get your second season ticket deposits
right.
in.
Sign
now.
Up now. A lot of jerseys we need to unload, though.
617-779-7937. We'll talk to Peter King about some of this stuff at the bottom of the hour. We'll discuss about Caserio in further depth when we come back. It's Dale and Keefe with Hart Sports Radio, WEEI.